Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A recent survey of 35,000 Americans by the Pew Research Center has revealed that Christianity is on the decline in the U.S. and that the number of people who are religiously unaffiliated is on the rise. Coming up, we'll hear from religious scholars about the implications of this trend. Joining us now by phone is the primary researcher of that study titled America's Changing Religious Landscape, Greg Smith. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's the second time the Pew Research Center has conducted a religious landscape study. What surprised you about contrast between that and the most recent one?
Yes, the first time we conducted this study was in 2007, and we then repeated it last year. We do these large studies periodically to try to provide a very precise and detailed accounting of the size of all of the religious groups that make up the U.S. population. One of the things that really struck me that was rather surprising to me in these findings is the continued rapid growth of the religiously unaffiliated population, people who describe themselves as atheists, agnostics, or as having no particular religion. We've known that group has been growing for some time now, but the continued pace of that growth is remarkable. We've now reached the point where about 23% of American adults say they have no religion, and that makes the religiously unaffiliated more numerous than both mainline Protestants and Catholics. That's new, and I think it was surprising.
There's a distinction. They're saying they have no religion, but it doesn't mean they don't practice a religion, does it? Does that make sense? I mean,
well,
they may live Christian values and that kind of a thing, or any number of religious values.
Well, it's true that religious identity is not necessarily the same thing as religious belief or religious practice.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that not all of the religiously unaffiliated are atheists or agnostics. In fact, most of them are people who say that their religion is nothing in particular, and some of them are religious in some way. They might pray, they might attend religious services occasionally, they might say religion is at least somewhat important to them. But they're far less traditionally religious.
Mm-hmm.
Than people who identify themselves with Protestantism or Catholicism or another faith. And in fact, the religiously unaffiliated, as they grow, appear to be becoming more secular. That is to say, the share of the religiously unaffiliated who identify as atheist or as agnostic is growing even as the whole group grows as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Greg Smith about a new report from the Pew Research Center. It's a survey of 35,000 Americans, and it tells us about the religious landscape in the United States. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Your report notes increasing racial and ethnic diversity within Christianity. What are you seeing there?
Well, one of the things that's been happening in the United States is that the country as a whole has been becoming more racially and ethnically diverse. That is to say, the share of Americans who are white has been declining, and the share who are members of other races or ethnic groups has been growing. And we see that across a variety of religious groups, including Christianity. So, for example, the share of evangelical Protestants who are racial and ethnic minorities has ticked up 5 points since we first did this study. And the share of Catholics who are racial and ethnic minorities has ticked up 6 points since we first did this study. So, yes, there is increasing racial and ethnic diversity in the population as a whole and in many religious groups.
And then can we make the link there that most of the decline in membership or self-identified affiliation in those religions is among the majority population?
Well, I'm not so sure that I would link the decline in the size of particular religious groups with race necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in this study, we categorize people into religious groups based not on their race, but on the specific denominations that they associate with. And what we see is that the decline in the Christian share of the population is driven mainly by losses among mainline Protestants as well as among Catholics. Both of those groups appear to be declining as a share of the population and even in terms of their raw numbers.
Right. There are 5 million fewer mainline Protestants than in 2007, the last survey. What happened to them? Does your survey ask?
Well, a big part of what's happening is generational replacement. What you have is an older generation of adults in the United States, among whom the vast majority identify with Christianity, while relatively few say they have no religion. As those older generations get older and begin to pass away, they are being replaced by a new generation of young adults that is far less Christian and far more religiously unaffiliated than their parents' or grandparents' generation ever has been. So generational replacement is a big part of this. It's not solely the case that people are leaving their religion. Rather, it's the case that older generations are passing away and they're being replaced by a new and different younger generation.
How did you ask these questions? Were they like along a continuum, how you identify with the different religions, not at all, somewhat, very much, that kind of a thing?
Well, we do have a bunch of questions in this survey about people's religious beliefs and practices, and we're going to be publishing those results over the course of the coming year. But in this survey, we focus especially on religious identity, the groups that people say they identify with. And what we have is kind of a series of branching questions. We start by asking people whether they identify as Protestant or Catholic or Jewish and give them a number of options. And then depending on what they say, we ask follow-up questions to continue to drill down and try to identify the most specific level of affiliation or identity that we can get to.
The historically black Protestant population has remained stable. Do you know what accounts for stability within that group?
Well, again, I think part of what you're seeing there is that members of that group are retaining their affiliation. And you're right that the declines that we see within Christianity aren't seen across the board. There are many Christian groups whose share of the population and whose raw numbers are holding steady or even growing. The historically black Protestant tradition is a good example of that. We see the same thing with respect to Mormonism and also Orthodox Christianity. And interestingly, when we look at evangelical Protestantism, evangelicalism is much more steady than, say, mainline Protestantism or Catholicism. The share of the population that identifies as evangelical has dropped a little bit, but not as much as some other groups. And in fact, the raw numbers of evangelical Protestants appear to be growing.
Religious intermarriage is on the rise.
It certainly seems to be. One of the questions that we ask people in this survey is about the religious identity of their spouse. And we also asked people when they got married. And when you look at the data, you can see that people who got married most recently are more likely to have a spouse with a different religion than their own as compared with people who got married a long time ago. And on that basis, we say it looks like religious intermarriage is on the rise.
And I thought it was interesting the issue of switching religion, that it's common in the United States that people switch religion. Do we mean from one Protestant group to another, or are we talking about from Catholic to Protestant, or what do we mean by that?
Well, you have all kinds of religious switching happening in the United States. The survey shows that upwards of 4 in 10 American adults currently have a religion that's different than the faith in which they were raised. That includes people who have moved from one religion to another. It also includes people who have moved from a religion to no religion, and vice versa. In fact, one of the things that's most interesting is that most people who have no religion, most people who are religiously unaffiliated, were in fact raised in a religion. Of everybody who is religiously unaffiliated today, 28% were raised as Catholics, 21% were raised as mainline Protestants, and 16% were raised as evangelical Protestants. So the religiously unaffiliated make the biggest gains through religious switching of any group we can look at in the survey.
You said that Christianity and especially Catholicism has been losing more adherence through religious switching than it has been gaining.
That's exactly right. And the Catholic numbers, I think, are particularly interesting. Mm-hmm. If you dig into those, you see that 13% of American adults are former Catholics. That is, 13% of all adults in the United States say that they were raised Catholic, but no longer identify as such. On the other hand, only 2% of American adults describe themselves as converts to Catholicism. So you've got 13% of adults who have left the church, 2% who have entered it through conversion. What that means for Catholicism is that there are 6 people leaving for every 1 person who joins. And there's really no other group in the survey with anything like that ratio of losses to gains through religious switching.
Abdul in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi. Hello, Abdul.
Yes, my question to the gentleman is, what's the fastest religion growing in America, fastest growing? And when you asked your question, did you ask multiple different religions, or are you just concerned with the 2 religions which you mentioned?
Good. I'm glad you brought that up. Greg Smith, what's the fastest growing religion in America? And you covered all religions, everything from Buddhism to...
We certainly did. Let me start with that latter question. Yeah. The full list of responses that we gave people just in our first question included Protestantism, Catholicism, Orthodox Christianity, Mormonism, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, atheism, agnosticism, nothing in particular, and people also had the opportunity to volunteer other religions as well. So we did try as best we could to cover all religions in the United States, not just Christianity, not just Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of which group is the fastest growing, that's a pretty tricky question to answer because a lot of it depends on your definition, who counts as a religious group, what constitutes growth. Is it growth in percentage terms or is it growth in raw numbers? So that a lot of that answer depends on your definitions. However, we can say that the religiously unaffiliated have grown rapidly. In fact, the percentage of Americans who identify as religiously unaffiliated has grown 7 percentage points in just 7 years. And if you put that in terms of raw numbers, then there are 19 million more religiously unaffiliated adults today than was the case in 2007 when we first conducted this study. So that group is growing very rapidly. We also see that non-Christian faiths are growing. The largest non-Christian faith in the United States is Judaism, but we also see significant growth among Muslims and among Hindus, albeit from a relatively small starting point.
Well, Greg Smith, I want to thank you for joining us today. Lots to talk about.
Thank you very much for having me.
Greg Smith, he's an associate director of research for the Pew Research Center. We'll continue to discuss the results of their survey of 35,000 Americans and how they identify religiously or not when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. More or most Americans seem to have a religion story. Some have chosen to stick with their childhood faith. Others have taken a different spiritual tack as adults. And now a recent Pew study finds that nearly 23% of Americans don't identify with any organized religion at all. That does not mean, however, that they are faithless. We're talking about the changing religious landscape in the United States. Joining us in the studios is Professor of Comparative Studies at Ohio State, Isaac Weiner. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
His recent book is entitled Religion Out Loud, Religious Sound, Public Space, and American Pluralism. Joining us by phone from Colorado is a professor at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio, Linda Mercadante. Welcome back, Linda.
Thank you.
Linda's most recent book is entitled Beliefs Without Borders, Inside the Minds of the Spiritual But Not Religious. Linda, this group of non-identifiers is only about 3 or 4% atheist or agnostic, so they're not shunning the idea of spirituality or religious ideals, I guess. What do you think is behind this trend away from organized religion?
Well, it's true. The people I interviewed, and I spoke with hundreds of them, are not atheists. They are interested and invested in spiritual growth and in their own spiritual life. So that is very exciting, and I think a good sign for America. But there's a lot of reasons why they would move away from organized religion in order to find this spiritual growth. One thing is we're kind of in a culture of what's called detraditioning. In other words, it seems to be appropriate, even cool, I mean, even trendy, to turn away from tradition. That's maybe been something that's always inherent in being American. We're always a little bit anti-authoritarian, but that's one factor. Another factor is people are having trouble now believing that there's something outside themselves that can communicate, that's intentional, that's conscious, in other words, a God. So people have they have a sense of the sacred, but they think it's more what we call immanent as opposed to transcendent. In other words, it's with them, in them, as opposed to outside them. That's another issue. And then a third factor that I think is very important is that we've really moved away from a culture where your eternal destination is the crucial question of your life, and we've moved into a culture where your self-fulfillment is the main question of your life, where your sense of identity and integrity and self-fulfillment. I think those are maybe the three largest factors.
In other words, we're living in the here and now and not
exactly.
As if there's something to come.
Exactly, although many of my interviewees did believe in things like reincarnation, but it wasn't the driving force of their lives usually.
Isaac Weiner, what do you think? I mean, I'd love to hear what you have to say about that, but also what you think about what this means in a larger sense about our culture. The idea of the detraditioning, as Linda said, it's not new. It seems to be very American, but this is pretty fundamental.
I think the survey data is interesting, and Linda made some really fascinating points about this rise of the so-called unaffiliated. For me, I think I start by reading the survey with an eye to what exactly this data seems to tell us and what it doesn't. So the survey is very clear that what it is doing is asking people to self-report on their religious affiliation. And as the first guest spoke about, the data, at least as published so far, doesn't tell us that much about beliefs and practices, doesn't tell us much about other ways of thinking about what it means to be religious. And so I think that's part of what's happening in this survey data as well as we try to make sense of it. I think Linda's comments about the ways that these people who fall into the unaffiliated category may still be religious or spiritual in ways we don't necessarily recognize is crucially important. And similarly, you may find very many people who are still identifying in so-called traditional religious terms, and yet maybe whose religious lives don't look like something that some of us might categorize as religion either. So there's a problem, I think, from the start of just trying to be clear about exactly what this data tells us and what it doesn't about religious culture in America today.
Mainline Christianity saw the sharpest decline in adherence from 2007, which was the first Pew survey of 35,000 Americans, to 2014, which was the most recent. And I was wondering, Linda Mercadante, does that surprise you?
Oh, no. I've been seeing this coming for a long time. I definitely was not surprised by this. I think it's a little more rapid than we might have expected. But we know it's happening. It's like a train, you know, roaring down the track. It can't be stopped. But I don't really think people should panic about this at all. I think that it's speaking into that particular group, mainline Protestants in particular, but also Catholics, and it's a wake up call, and that's a good thing.
Isaac, were you surprised at the speed of change?
So I also was not surprised. I think these are trends we've seen for a long time now that certainly are intensifying in the survey data. I guess I wonder a little bit how much this is a decline versus how much we talk about this as a change and simply how people are classifying and talking about themselves.
Right.
So in many cases, these are probably people who for a long time have had the particular beliefs or practices that we're now classifying in this way, but due to various social changes and social trends are now describing themselves in terms of unaffiliated or no particular religion, as opposed to still describing themselves in traditionally Christian terms.
You use the phrase wake-up call. Linda, how might you see organized religion responding to these kinds of numbers? Surely they're seeing it at the collection box level on Sundays already.
Well, only in the sheer numbers, but as far as a percentage of giving by individual members, actually that's very strong and possibly going up. So it isn't There isn't a decline in generosity, but there's a good decline in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a wake-up call in a good way. And as Phyllis Tickle says, she says every 500 years is kind of a big readjustment within Christianity, and this is surely one of them. And usually it's for the better. Usually it turns out to be a good thing. I think that people panic because Protestantism in particular has been the dominant voice in the culture. You know, when we look towards a spiritual or religious perspective, that's where we used to look. We call that hegemony. Well, Protestantism is losing that hegemony, and of course people panic in that situation. But what's really happening is that Christianity is being called back to its roots, because Christianity started as a counterculture. Jesus was, in fact, a radical. And we may have lost some of that. By becoming a dominant voice in the culture, we lost that radical edge. And I think it's a good thing to regain that and not feel so responsible for upholding the culture and its values. Now, not everybody's going to like that, but I think there's a good point there.
So I approach this conversation from a different perspective, of course. That is, I'm not a theologian or speaking from within the Christian tradition, but a professor of comparative religion at Ohio State, where I don't necessarily, I think, interpret this data as good or bad. It certainly, I think, documents a change in how people talk about their religious lives and religious identities in American culture. But I'm not sure this is necessarily evidence of decline or something that we need to be concerned or worried about. I think that religious cultures are constantly changing. The other point that I would make in response to Linda's comments, I think, is that changes in how people identify or affiliate does not necessarily indicate lack of cultural or political influence. So that I think some have suggested that it's precisely because Christianity has had such a pervasive influence on American culture that many people may not feel the need to affiliate or attend church, and yet there's still a pervasive influence that is felt in our political life, in our cultural life, even in other religious traditions. The ways that other religious communities come to organize themselves in America, for example, around self-organizing autonomous institutions, temples or synagogues with governing boards and pastors who have to be as much entrepreneurs as they are spiritual leaders. A lot of that is influenced by particularly Protestant forms of church organization. Politically, many of our most important social movements and political movements have been influenced and informed by Christian arguments and debates, and that may, and I expect, will continue regardless of how many people actually check off a form of affiliation on a survey like this. And the other thing I would say about that is there's lots of ways of measuring, I think, religious influence. So this is not just true about Christianity, but you might take the example of Buddhism, for example, too, where I think the Pew survey shows something about 1% of Americans identify as Buddhist. And yet a remarkable study that I saw from about a decade ago found that as many as 12% of Americans claimed that their religious beliefs and practices were importantly influenced by Buddhist teachings and practices. Mm-hmm. So there's a very complicated religious culture in America that includes people experimenting and mixing and matching and taking and borrowing that I don't think comes across as clearly as it might in this kind of organized survey.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And I'm wondering, Isaac Weiner, how much that has to do with people like you who are teaching comparative religion courses in universities and the like, that people are just better educated about what's out there. Linda Mercadante?
Yes. Oh, I agree with everything that Dr. Weiner just said. I think it is that we do have a changing religious culture. So I'm not, just to go back for a minute, when I speak about whether it's good or bad or so forth, the people that I speak with and work with are, understandably in a bit of a panic about this. And so one of my jobs is to try to say partly what Dr. Weiner is saying, you know, cultures change, but also to say, let's see the good side of this. Let's see the bright side. Let's see what we can make of it in this culture. But I wanted to return to the issue of beliefs for a second, because as Dr. Weiner was saying, there are values that in some ways what we are seeing could be the triumph of liberal Protestantism. And I wouldn't be the first person to say that, because many of the values that liberal Protestantism brought to the table and beliefs are now kind of diffused throughout the culture. And so in a way, Protestantism can be proud of its success. And so people don't see the need to affiliate when those values are already out there. But in my interviews with people, I also saw what I would call a potentially new emerging meta-narrative, meaning the big story that explains everything. And there were clear beliefs that were emerging from this very diverse group. I went all over the U.S. also Canada, and a little bit outside this country to see what was happening inside their minds. That's why the book is titled that. And we don't have the benefit of the Pew survey yet with their beliefs section, which we'll get soon. Mm-hmm. But what I found was, excuse me, that there was a growing consensus around certain beliefs they wanted to reject and certain beliefs they wanted to accept and live by. So it is, we are living in a very dynamic, changing religious, spiritual culture. I totally agree with that.
If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm talking with Isaac Weiner. He's an assistant professor of comparative studies, religious studies at Ohio State University, and also Linda Mercadante. She is a theology professor at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio. The report found that nearly one-third of American adults, that is 31.7%, say they were raised Catholic. And among that group, 41% no longer identify with Catholicism. The study also found that 80% of Hindus and 75% of Muslims and Jews still identify with their childhood religions. What do you make of the contrast between the Catholicism and what's happening with the Hindus, Muslims, Jews, and so forth? Isaac Weiner?
So this is a complicated question, and I think, again, brings us back in some ways to thinking about what it is that we mean by religious. I think that scholars often have a very difficult time distinguishing among categories like religious and racial and ethnic, and that for some communities, religious affiliation or religious identity is as much a form of belonging to a particular group as it is anything about personal belief, as it often gets interpreted, I think, in the broader popular culture. So in the cases of groups like Jews or Hindus or Muslims, that many of which, I mean, in the cases of Hindus and Muslims, certainly, although not in, there are large segments of Muslim communities in America that are not immigrant. A lot of the rise is due to newer communities here, mm-hmm. that very often religious affiliation is a form also of kind of cultural belonging and ethnic identity. Within Judaism, you have many people who certainly don't make belief the central focus of their Jewish lives, maybe don't even practice at all, don't go to synagogue, don't believe in God, don't keep kosher, and yet would still describe themselves as Jewish. Do they mean that religiously? Do they mean that ethnically or culturally? These are really fraught categories that scholars spend a lot of time trying to unpack. And so I think it's, again, difficult to read too much sometimes into this data without knowing more about what it means to people to describe themselves as, say, Jewish or Hindu or Muslim.
Mm-hmm. But the contrast, I mean, no matter what, there's still that contrast between the difference in the Catholics and those other religions.
So again, so part of that, I think, might be, and this is, you know, theory, speculation mm-hmm. at this point. Part of this has to do with, I think, the difference between being a small minority tradition within mm-hmm. American culture versus a much larger majority. Catholics have been about 20 to 25% of the American population for a significant amount of U.S. history, and although have faced significant persecution, discrimination at times, certainly can be considered part of the dominant culture, the way that Jews, Muslims, Hindus, a far smaller minority where remaining affiliated would be far more important. Also, as we know, the Catholic Church has gone through a number of crises in the last decade around sexual abuse scandals, crisis of authority in certain ways that I think has, we certainly see the effects of that in the ways that people choose or not to identify as remaining within the church. Mm. Now, again, they might still retain certain spiritual practices, certain beliefs, certain ways of living, but the statement of remaining within the church or not in an institution that has a much more clearly defined sense of what it means to be Catholic, with a hierarchy, with are you baptized or not, I think becomes a more interesting statement there.
Mm-hmm. Linda, I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned earlier about the Christian values and how they're already uh-huh. diffused uh-huh. throughout the culture, so that, you know, that it's succeeded, it's victorious, tell me what you mean by diffused throughout the culture. Do you mean that, yeah, I am my brother's keeper, that we have a general value that we should take care of, feed children, make sure people are fed and clothed and housed and that kind of a thing?
Yes, that's part of it. Okay. Also the sense of equality. Since the Protestant Reformation, the idea that there was no need for a mediator between the individual and God, that was a powerful, powerful thought, previously unthought, and it's diffused, it's come come a long way, and it's diffused into our culture into a sense of equality, that everyone has equal rights, has a right to their own mind and their own views. And the fact that the Reformation and going forward and moving into Protestantism believed that everyone had a right to read and be able to interpret the Bible for themselves now seems to be diffused in our culture, that everyone has a right to make up their own mind and think their own thoughts. So there's a lot of values there and beliefs that Protestantism was quite successful in disseminating that now has diffused into American culture.
Beth and Hilliard, you're on the air. Beth, welcome.
Hi. My point is that I'm a Catholic and was raised a Catholic and love being Catholic. But at this stage, I am concerned that all these organized religions, Protestant and non-Protestant, Jewish not as much, have taken their focus away from their congregation. Instead of focusing their time to try to build the families, bring people together, they've taken to the airwaves, they've taken to the political legislating, they pay lobbyists to lobby for their viewpoints, they go after dollars for schools, for their private schools, instead of building that strength within their community. And it absolutely puts me off, whether it's, say, lobbying against birth control, et cetera, that kind of thing. It doesn't belong. Separation of church and state is great to save the people that go to church. And by going out that way, they've alienated a ton of people, or maybe just me.
Okay.
So,
all right,
I have nowhere to pray. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Beth. Linda Mercadante, you did talk about the governing part. You guys were talking about the governing issue and how religions have begun, the mainline religions started to be part of the controlling factor in the United States.
Right. Well, I agree with this caller that many of my interviewees, and remember, I spoke with hundreds and hundreds of spiritual but not religious people. Many of them have been turned off by this mixing of politics and religion. Now, I wouldn't say that's their only reason for turning away from organized religion, but for many, it was an undercurrent that was extremely important for them.
Hmm. I would say two things in response to that. One, I think that we hear these theories a lot, and I'm sure that they are absolutely correct, that people are coming more and more to associate organized religion with overtly political activity, and this can be a turnoff. The interesting thing in the Pew survey, though, is that relative to mainline Protestants and Catholics, evangelical Christians, who have tended to be the most politically organized and most politically active, are not seeing a similar rate of decline. So I think that the involvement of religion and politics has certainly turned off many in perhaps the more liberal denominations, but those who are in the denominations that have tended to be more politically active do not seem to be as turned off by it, perhaps. The other point that I would make is that, again, I think this really helpfully ties into this notion of what's really at stake here is a particular response to the way that religion has come to be understood. So the people responding to this poll seem to understand the category of religion as talking about organized institutions, as talking about dogma, as talking about doctrine. And so again, the folks who fall into the unaffiliated category, there may be ways we can think of them as being as much or more religious if we broaden or expand the way we think about what it means to be religious. And so what the survey is showing us is that people are responding to a very particular notion of what we've come to understand as being religious that maybe speaks more to the limitations of our categories than it does to any good or bad judgment of these people's practices.
Right. I agree with that. And the fact that some of my interviewees were turned off to the mixing of religion and politics really had a lot to do with the issues that they saw this particular religious groups promoting. I think if they found other issues being promoted, like work for climate change, you know, to protect our environment, they probably would say, yes, that's very good. We want religion to be involved in politics. So I think it does. It can cut both ways. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about the religious landscape of the United States, the decline of the Christian population, and the increase in the number of nuns, as in those who are not affiliated or feel as though they're not affiliated with any religion. Still with us in the studio, OSU professor Isaac Weiner, and by phone, author and theologian at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio, Linda Mercadante. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also post your comment or your question on Facebook. We have an email from Andrew in Clintonville. He says, becoming unreligious to me means letting go of dogma and absolutes. This allows people to love everyone because they are no longer taught to be afraid of people who are different.
So again, what I find so fascinating there is the way that the category of religion comes to be assumed to imply dogma, rigidity, intolerance. And that's, of course, one way of thinking about religion. But there are many folks who understand religion otherwise, or who no longer find their category of religion applying to them because they reject those kinds of precepts or define their religious lives in other kinds of ways. But again, I think that speaks to the problem with our categories more than it necessarily shows a decline in religiosity in American life.
I found that, too. I found that sentiment that the email expressed very dominant in my interviewees. But what was interesting is that they had other, they wouldn't call them absolutes, but they had other fairly determined positions on quite a few things. So it really, rather than a change from dogma to non-dogma, it was really a rhetoric, a change of rhetoric, I think.
A change of the focus of the dogma or a focus of purpose.
A change of what could be called a language game, just a change in what the language is, what the ethos is. So it was a move from one ethos to another rather than a move away from doctrine altogether.
Any sense of regionalism about any of this, Linda Mercadante, in your work? Did you see that the trends were stronger or not in different parts of the country?
Well, that's very interesting. I did look at the Pew survey. They have a really great feature with a map where you can look at the different breakdowns in the state by state. But in my research, I found that, and again, remember, I'm looking at belief primarily, I found that it was rather similar across the U.S. and even into Canada, which is why I say there may be an emerging meta-narrative or grand story that's taking over. So I did quite a bit of research in Columbus, Ohio, and I did quite a bit of research in Boulder, Colorado, where I am right now. And I figured that they'd be quite different places. And while there were it was easier to find the spiritual but not religious in Boulder than in Columbus. I found plenty in Columbus, however. They really would have agreed if I'd sat them down together, as different as they might be demographically, socioeconomically, and so forth, intellectually they would have agreed on a tremendous amount of things. And I found that fascinating. So I don't think it's regional in the sense of the beliefs being different.
Mm-hmm. And another issue, the religious intermarriage appears to be on the rise. And I wondered, wouldn't that naturally affect particularly younger generations coming up? There's not the emphasis. I mean, you don't have the two parents who agree that you must go to church on Sunday morning. One's like, don't really care. The other one, maybe not.
Exactly. And what I also found was that my Gen X and millennial interviewees who had baby boomer parents, I could always tell they had baby boomer parents because many of them said almost in exactly the same words, my parents didn't want to force any religion on me like they had it forced on them. And so they raised me without religion. And so a lot of this really began among baby boomers and then how they treated their children and raised them without religion, thinking that religion was something that was imposed as opposed to chosen.
The one thing I would be careful not to generalize too much, I think, about the intermarriage data, and that there are a number of studies that suggest, for example, within American Judaism, that many intermarried couples, the non-Jewish spouse often takes very seriously taking on certain Jewish commitments or raising their children as Jewish.
And convert.
And absolutely, and conversion. But even in cases where they don't necessarily convert, still takes very seriously the responsibility of religious upbringing of children. So I think we should be careful not to rush too quickly to assume intermarriage necessarily leads to a falling away from tradition altogether.
Except that I'm actually a product of intermarriage myself. with a Jewish mother and a Roman Catholic Italian immigrant father. And the way they settled that problem was to just put their religions on a back shelf in the closet and shut the door.
And this, to me, I think, is where we get to both the really interesting findings of this kind of data from a large-scale survey like this, but also some of the limitations of doing a large-scale survey, and that a number of interesting,
right,
more in-depth ethnographic and historical studies are increasingly coming out that study how families actually negotiate these issues on a daily basis rather than relying on kind of, you know, a one- or two-time phone call conversation. I know,
right,
that you're, and so I think that's really important to take into account,
mm-hmm,
as well.
That's right.
Chris in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Great topic. I was raised Catholic, left the church in my mid-30s, and I just find it so fascinating that one of the reasons I really left is because I began to, in my exploration of religions in a comparative religion class, and I found out that a lot of the Jewish people really had values the same as the Christians, and the Muslim people have values the same as the Christians. And so I get a little put off when I hear a lot about this, well, the Christian values are doing this and the Christian values are doing that, when really, when you look at all the religions, at the core, they're very much the same.
Think that's a very interesting comment, if I may comment on that,
yeah,
myself. I think that in some ways that raises the issue of what's called perennialism. In other words, they're all really the same at their heart. All mystics are having the same mystics of various religions are having the same essential experience. We all believe in compassion, love, brotherhood, sisterhood, all that. I think that homogenizes religions a little bit too much and doesn't respect their inherent differences. Although I value the sentiment, which is that we should be peaceful and get along with each other and minimize our differences. So I get that, but I think it does minimize the inherent differences among religions.
So I would agree with that and add that I appreciate the sentiment, and I think many of my students in my introduction to comparative religion classes often adopt that stance. And in some, mm-hmm, vague abstract level, it's probably true and it's probably right. But what I spend a lot of time in my classes doing, and it sounds like Professor Mercadante does the same, is trying to help students understand not only the important differences among religious traditions, but also within religious traditions. So as we know, not all Christians agree on what it means to be Christian, on what Christian values are, on what Christian practices are. Certainly not all Jews agree, not all Muslims agree. And what it means to be Christian or Jewish or Muslim has changed dramatically over history in different, mm-hmm, social and cultural contexts. And so one of the main focuses of the introductory classes that I try to teach is precisely to help students try to understand what the significance of these kinds of differences are when we talk about religious history and religious culture. The other, if I could add one,
yeah,
more point, because I'm always fascinated when students talk about how introduction to comparative religion classes change their religious beliefs and practices and identities. This is something that we talk a lot about among religious studies professors and scholars. There was a fascinating study that was done a few years ago at this point on the goals of religious studies professors in introduction to comparative, mm, religion classes and the goals of students. And it found that by and large, professors, we approach our classes trying to teach students to understand the differences among religions, the role that religion plays in the world, how religion has come to be understood in the modern world, and did not at all see our role as one as, you know, kind of spiritual guide.
Mm-hmm.
And very often our students are coming to our classes looking,
searching.
I mean, either they're searching or through the work that they do in our classes, it comes to shape and change the way that they think about religion in the world. And that's a delicate balance we have to negotiate, where it's not our goal to change the students, but I think inevitably through learning and learning to think critically about religion and religions, it inevitably shapes the way we think about what is a religion and how, and the role that religion plays in our world.
Mm-hmm.
Chris in Westerville, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. What about when I grew up in a certain particular town that was largely Dutch Christian Reformed with, you know, a few Catholics here and there, you know, and other religions, I'm sure. It was big enough that it had others, but you just weren't exposed to them as much, not until I went to college. And I'm wondering, we are such a fluid society now. We're exposed to so many more just people in general that I can't imagine that doesn't have some kind of influence on the amount of switching that's going on. Isaac Weiner?
So there's no question that the extent of personal relationships and personal contact has a dramatic influence, I think, on how Americans experience their own religious identities and religious lives. And so certainly we live in a time when more and more people are coming into contact with members of other religions, are interacting with them on a daily basis, whether in the context of marriage and families, whether in the context of the workplace or at school. The other point I think I would make is that the language of religious switching often assumes that people move from one religion to another. So they go from being Christian to being something else, whether it's unaffiliated or Buddhist or Jewish, or they move from being Jewish to something else. I think that also speaks to one of the problems with some of the categories in the survey, in that we know Americans are nothing if not endlessly creative and experimental when it comes to religion. And nobody fits neatly into the kind of single boxes that the Pew survey puts them into. Mm-hmm. And so what do we do, for example, with people who are Jewish but spend more time engaging in Buddhist meditation than they do going to synagogue, maybe even call themselves Jew-Boos, a very common category, but don't see themselves as having converted from Judaism to Buddhism, or the number of atheists, and surveys have shown this, who claim to have a belief in a higher power, or the number of Christians who claim
call themselves atheists,
right. Mm-hmm. Or the numbers of Christians who claim to believe in reincarnation, or who visit astrologers or other kinds of New Agey practices, perhaps. And so we see a lot of mixing and matching, and even that is fraught because I think it assumes that we have a stable notion of what it means to be Christian or what it means to be Buddhist. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of rich variety and a lot of overlapping, I think, circles and trends that very few people in America, I think, really fit neatly into any particular boxes.
And I'm wondering, Linda Mercadante, yeah. Is it going to be decades and hundreds of years before we can look back on this time and see it for what it is, or can we draw a lot of conclusions at this point?
Well, yeah, of course, when you're in the midst of great change, it's hard to get a perspective because you're in the middle of the hurricane, the tornado. But I agree with what Dr. Weiner is saying here, and I think it raises the issue of hybridity and syncretism within the religious world. Syncretism or even hybridity is almost a dirty word, but among my interviewees, hundreds of these people were proud of being mixing and matching and not affiliating, but being I'm a Jewish Christian, you know, shaman or something. I'm a Wicca practitioner of paganism with a little, you know, something else thrown in, and they were quite thrilled and happy to report this, not ashamed. And so although many religions, the monotheistic religions, do really talk about staying faithful to the one God, and that implies staying faithful to the way you've understood that God through your faith, the new trend seems to be what Dr. Weiner is saying, which is mixing and matching and being creative and not really affiliating with any one thing and being very proud of that whole thing.
And so is it partial? I mean, are some religions, I guess the question is then, more accepting of that hybridization of how people see themselves? Mm-hmm. And take, for instance, the Catholic Church example, where it is pretty much a our way or the highway kind of a thing. I mean, you can't be partially Catholic. You can't say, well, I believe in, you know, abortion rights, but... You know, and because that's such a big thing to the church, or it appears to be, it's not, they like, if you don't like it, leave.
I mean, I would say yes and no to that, I guess.
Okay.
On the one hand, kind of, you know, many studies have suggested, for example, that one of the attractions or appeals of Buddhism among Americans is precisely that it doesn't draw clear boundaries and that you can engage in Buddhist practices or study Buddhist teachings without formally switching or converting to being a Buddhist, and that accounts for some of the studies I mentioned before about how Buddhism has a very pervasive influence on American religious culture beyond the simple numbers who say I am a Buddhist. That being said, I think that this kind of way of living a religious life is true of, that's how people live their religious lives. And I think it's true within Catholicism too. You know, I mean, how many times have we seen studies suggesting that despite what the official Catholic doctrines on, say, contraception or on abortion, lay Catholics believe and think differently. And as a professor of comparative religion, as opposed to somebody within a theologian within the Catholic Church, I don't evaluate them as them being good or bad Catholics. I see that as how religion works and people make their peace and live within institutions. and they don't necessarily agree with or follow everything those institutions teach, and yet still find ways to live within them in powerfully important ways.
Unfortunately, we have to conclude the conversation now, but I hope you'll join us again. Linda Mercadante, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
Linda Mercadante, she's a theology professor at the Methodist Theological School in Ohio and author of Belief Without Borders, Inside the Minds of the Spiritual but Not Religious. And Isaac Weiner, thanks to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Isaac Weiner, he's an assistant professor of comparative studies at Ohio State University. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.